Patreon subscribers to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is David Ellis, and as every episode, I'm joined by the illustrious, fantastic man from the Western Coast, Mr. Alex Hogg. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
Before we jump into today's show, a quick reminder to everyone listening that if you aren't subscribed already, please follow or subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening and leave us a review and share the show with your prog friends. This greatly helps us to expand the reach of the show.
Yep, absolutely. Now, massive show this week, despite the last few weeks where there hasn't really been a lot happening. All of a sudden, it's like they just turned on the taps and everything occurred. so we've got a massive show for you guys today. And we may as well start with some follow-up, Hoggy. Now, Hoggy, last time you were talking about the Birds Rope Collective documentary, I believe there's some updates with that.
Yes, it has. As of a couple of days ago, they reached their funding goal. So thank you very much to everybody out there who got in on that and backed that project. I'll be very, very interested to see what comes out of it when it's finished.
Absolutely.
So that was the only piece of follow-up that we had for this show. So we'll jump straight into the news. And, well, given how much of an Anathema fan I am, I put this one in the show notes today and I couldn't help myself to talk about it, but Daniel Kavanagh has a new project called Weather Systems. Yes, they are taking the name from the album. The music will be a continuation of the previous band and the previous band's legacy. So far, it's a project only by Daniel Kavanagh, but it can expand, which I'd be very interested to see. I wonder who gets to stay in the new band and who doesn't. One person that I can bet who probably will not be in the new band will be his brother Vincent, who apparently is working on a new electronic solo project. Now, I'd be more interested in hearing what a prog guy who started in doom metal is doing in electronic music these days.
Well, I mean, someone may be able to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure Skrillex was originally a producer for bands like Between the Buried and Me and all that stuff.
You're telling the story. Yeah, that sounds interesting. If it's true, I'd be very interested to find out.
I'm pretty sure that's where he got his snare samples from. Was from like all the old master recordings from like a whole bunch of metal guys. So
yeah, right,
it's been
okay.
done before, but it's definitely always interesting when it happens.
Yeah, there's no more word on what Vincent is up to other than that. So we'll stay tuned and we'll have some more information if it ever comes to light. So switching to local news now, there's been a new piece of music coming out from Terra Maze. This is the title track from their forthcoming record, Sorella Minora. Now, what did you think of this one, Dave?
Look, the guys from Terra Maze are extremely gifted musos, okay? They're very good at what they do. But remember a couple of episodes ago we were talking about like length of song for the sake of making length of song, like kind of bloat for bloat's sake?
Making it long because it's prog and prog therefore means long.
Yeah, that's this track. I mean, they're very talented guys, but, you know, if Paul McCartney still uses a producer, then these guys really have no excuse to have someone in the room with them telling them something should be changed or something doesn't quite work.
Look, as much as I'd like to like this song, I started listening to the song, and after 6 minutes, I think it was 6 minutes, it's a 26-minute song. We'll throw a link in the show notes of the YouTube video for people to have a listen to it. After 6 minutes in, I'm like, God damn it, how many times am I going to have to listen to this chorus? And after that, as soon as I got to that point, I was listening to it with my wife. I said that to her, and she just turned and looked at me, and I'm just, okay, we're done with this song now.
Yeah.
It's like, I think the prog world has moved on from here, from that sort of late 90s, early 2000s era stuff like Spock's Beard and early Transatlantic and even like Dream Theater doing like 20-minute plus epics. Mm-hmm. If a song's going to be that long, I think there's an expectation that it's going to be like a linear piece of music with movements and a direction. And this just isn't.
Yeah.
I kind of went around and around and around for 6 minutes. And I'm just like, God, come on. Okay. We've heard this chorus 3 times already now. Let's just keep moving on.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I mean, what was different about the epics in the 2000s, right? Like your Dream Theater and your Spock's Beard and all that sort of stuff. And even the Porcupine Tree to an extent, they flowed. Right. They were fantastic, amazing songs, which worked because you could listen to them. And then about 10 minutes later, you go, wait on, how the fuck do we get here? You know, and you go back and you'd listen to it and you go, oh, that's really cool. You know, the movements were amazing. The way things like jumped and evolved was awesome. It didn't leave you thinking, you know, how many more times do I need to listen to this bit? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly. There was a lot of sort of verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus. And I'm just like, okay, come on. Okay. Can we just keep going now?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it might sound like that we're dunking on Terra Maze, and we're not really,
not at all,
because there are plenty of other bands who have fallen into this trap as well. Looking at you, Dream Theater. You know, I think they realized it with a few of their records. They're like, you know what, we need to kind of bring it back a bit and make it a bit shorter and kind of more direct. And maybe I think that's what needs to happen here too.
Yeah, and look, bands get it wrong all the time. You know, that this was just a particularly obtuse example of it going around and around and around. And no thanks. But look, make your own mind up about it is what I'm going to say. You know, stream it, have a listen to it, and tell us what you think, and tell us why you think we're wrong, because undoubtedly we will get some messages of people telling us that we were incorrect about a few things. But you know who else? Another band, prog band from Melbourne, have a brand new album out. I don't know if you remember the band Acolyte.
Oh, yeah, I know Acolyte.
Yeah. We announced on the show a little while ago that they were actually reforming, much to everyone's love and amazement. And they've got a brand new album out already. It's available now, and you can stream and or buy it from wherever it is you stream and or buy stuff from. But, you know, us here at the podcast, we recommend buying it from their Bandcamp. We'll put a link in the show notes. Have you listened to this yet, Hoggy?
I listened to most of the record. I didn't quite get a chance to listen to the whole thing before we started recording today, but I definitely got a chance to listen to a good portion of the record. Mm-hmm. And I particularly like the opening song, Entropy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great opening, and then just like a real sort of brooding kind of dark vibe to the whole thing that just builds excellently. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this record. I'll definitely be going back to it and having another listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's definitely worth it. It is, you know... Just fantastic. This next one, there's been so much new music. There's been so much new Australian music in the last little bit, and so many Australian bands.
As far as I
can
work out, it's all coming out of Melbourne. Huh? Weird, huh?
Yeah, I know. Funny that. The Omnific, brand new track from them called Wax and Wane. Have you had a chance to listen to this one as well, Hoggy?
I listened to this one, yeah. Look, I'm a big fan of the Omnific, actually. I love the playing of these guys, the different uses of the bass to create the sounds. It's very clever. And it's fully on display in this track as well. There's great drumming as well in this, actually, I should point out. There's some great drumming in there. Mm. And I particularly like the use of the bass as a lead guitar, but not just like in the terms of like shredding and doing that sort of thing with the bass guitar, because I don't think that would really work necessarily. But just the way that they do it, it's really cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's a great track. I personally think it's still lacking guitars, but that's mostly me being a snobby and jealous guitarist and not really wanting to admit that they could probably play all the instruments I play better than I would.
I'm betting they probably started on guitar.
Maybe.
They must have done. There must be like some guitar background. I mean, different people start on the guitar first. Nobody starts on the bass, do they really?
Well,
you start with the guitar, then you become the bass guitarist when you join a band and you realize they don't have one, and then all of a sudden you get stuck with the job, right? Isn't that how it works?
Or alternatively, you realize that the lead singer has more sex appeal than you, so you just decide to pick up the bass and just go whole hog. great track. As with all of this, all the links are going to be in the show notes below. Please support your local artists, buy it on Bandcamp, and maybe buy some merch while you're there as well. Now you've got this next point here as well.
Well, some very exciting tour news, at least here in Australia anyway, because I mean some tours are starting to get announced for later the year and into next year in America and in Europe and stuff, but I still look at that and I wonder if any of that's still gonna happen. But anyway. So plenty are coming around on tour around Australia, including a trip to the West Coast, which is very exciting for me. I mean, yes. The last time I saw Plenty play was when they opened Be Prog, my friend, in Barcelona a couple of years ago.
Yeah, last time I saw them was Sydney a few years ago. I can't remember exactly when, but yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
I believe as well that there's going to be a special guest on the tour as well, which is friend of the show, Stephen Taranto. Who we still need to get on the show for a fucking interview. But anyway, that's
only
awesome
on the
that
east. Only on the east coast, though. Only on the east coast. He's not coming to Perth, and he's not coming to Perth, and he's not coming to Adelaide. Ooh. Fair enough. It's rather expensive to fly people here, and you know you want to get some local opening bands on the bill.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yep.
Fair enough. Having said that, though, as of this recording now, there is currently some COVID-19 related problems in Melbourne, so this might all get binned off out the window very shortly.
If you're in basically any of the major capital cities, except for I think Darwin and Hobart, I don't think he's hitting those two up. You can definitely go and see this guy. COVID, allowing and the COVID gods shining on us, then you can definitely go check this guy out, and I'd highly recommend going and seeing him. Because it's insane. And if you are one of the East Coast major cities and you get to see him with Stephen Taranto, trust me, you are in for a fucking treat because they're both nutsos. And you know what? Speaking of tour news as well, Caligula's Horse also have a great concert streaming event coming up called Live After Lockdown. It's also going to be a series of shows up in Brisbane if you can get up there for it, and I'm seriously contemplating flying up for it. But if you can't, then you can definitely watch the live stream online. Tickets for the live stream are like $25, but you can get a tour shirt as well for $40. So do yourselves a favor, buy the tour shirt and help support this amazing fucking band, because A, they deserve it, and B, amazing. Definitely check that out. And live stream stuff has come a long way in the last like 2 years because it's kind of had to. And it's amazing. Take it from me, there's some amazing live streams out there.
Well, speaking of amazing live streams out there, you got to watch the Carnival live stream that went down a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't unable to see it because it was being streamed at a really awkward time for me. Mm-hmm. But tell us all about it, Dave. What happened? How did it go down?
It was fucking sensational. So it wasn't a live show that was just streamed. They'd actually recorded the entire thing in the Heath Ledger Theatre in Perth, which is hilarious. Because I'm pretty sure they were recording when we were there. And if I'd have known that, I would have definitely tried to get in there and go.
Yeah, that whole thing was behind closed doors. There was no live audience. I mean, trust me.
Yeah.
If they had even announced tickets, I mean, the tickets when Carnival go on sale here get snapped up within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's bananas.
Yeah.
Mainly because they still insist on playing small clubs, but that's another complaint for another day.
But no, it was shot extremely well. The audio was fucking fantastic because obviously they recorded everything and then actually sent it off to get professionally mixed. So it was ostensibly a live DVD kind of thing, and it was amazing. There were a couple of streaming issues whereby we kind of dropped a couple of songs here in Australia and it kind of jumped forward and the server crashed and all that kind of stuff. But they were really good about it and they actually made up for it by giving us a private link to actually watch the show again later. And I know a few people that did that and skipped to particular songs and all that. But they basically did Sound Awake from beginning to end and then a couple of songs off some other albums, including a brand new one as well that had never been heard before. Well, they'd played it live, but they'd never actually committed it to tape kind of thing.
Is it newly written or one that's just sort of been kicking around for quite some time? They've just never got around to putting on a record.
So it's been kicking around in that they've been playing it live, but it will be appearing on their next album. So
when's that happening? When was the last time they put a record out?
Well, the last album was Asymmetry, which was a while back. I think it was 2016 or something. But they are working on the new album. But then again, every band is working on a new album. I don't know when the new album is going to come out, but I, I suspect that we will know reasonably soon when all of that stuff is going to come out. Now, there are a few rumblings as well that they're actually going to make this a live DVD as well, like a Blu-ray or something like that, simply because the reaction from everyone in the world was, oh, my God, can you put this onto a Blu-ray for us? We will pay you whatever it is that we need to pay you to get that to happen. So that very well may be happening as well. So, Hoggy, you may not be missing out just yet. We may be able to get a copy of it for you yet. But it was excellent. A fantastic streaming event, and I'm just sorry that the people who missed it genuinely, because it was so good. The shooting was amazing. The actual the lighting was incredible, and it was actually really interesting to see them playing like a full live show in front of an empty audience as well. That was the thing that was really, really cool. And they utilized that as well at certain points with Kenny being in the inverted quotes audience, and so on and so forth. It was really cool, really well done, 100%. Like, that's how you do a live stream, people. That's gold standard from now on.
If you've got the money and resources to do it, I mean, that would have not been a cheap enterprise to do. That would have been rather, you know, they've got to hire people and,
yep,
you know, get a theatre and do all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then presumably navigate the myriad of ever-changing restrictions about where they were allowed to be and who was allowed to be there and all the rest of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, you don't do that sort of thing with just one man and a still camera. There's a lot of people involved to do stuff.
That's true. Yeah, and there was definitely high production value on this. It's huge production value. But I tell you what, it paid off. It was fantastic, really, really fantastic. And I don't know how many people they had watching worldwide, but, I mean, they had streams going in all of the major continents and all the major time zones, so... You know,
because that is one of the fun. That is one of the fun logistical problems with a live stream. It's like, when do you put it on? Like,
yeah, yeah.
This is, and usually here in Australia, we're the ones who end up on the short end of the stick.
Yeah,
because they want to try and, you know, if they're doing a stream, they'll center it to be sort of like a mid-Atlantic sort of time, so you can get everybody in America and most of the people in Europe, and then maybe parts of Asia or something. And yeah, unfortunately, because we're such a small country with so few people, we kind of get left out of it. Difference though with Carnival is because, of course, they're an Australian band, so there's more fans here. They want to get to the local scene, I guess. So, well, I mean, streaming it at a not unreasonable time for us.
Well, there's that, and the fact that it was pre-recorded meant that they could stream it whenever they wanted. So they could have it pop up at this time in this particular place, and then this time in this particular place. They'd obviously actually thought about it quite well, and they've done an amazing job. And I do want to just shout out very quickly too. Kenny's voice was on fucking point. Now, I've seen Carnival enough times to know that there was probably a bit of auto-tune on there. If there wasn't, then I'm amazingly impressed. If there was, I'm not surprised.
And when you've got the opportunity to maybe tighten up one or two things, you might want to do that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was amazing. Like, genuinely fantastic concert. I sat here at my computer and watched it, and I was just like, yeah, this is sick. The only thing it made me want to do is go and see them again live. So kudos to you guys. Now, we should move on because we do have a couple of bits of news left to get through. Frankie's Pizza in Sydney. Now, you know about Frankie's Pizza. I'm almost certain that you've been to Frankie's Pizza. If not, you've heard me babbling on about it innocently.
I've definitely heard you babbling on about it. I don't think I've ever been there, though.
So it's one of the last bastions of rock music and underground music here in Sydney that's left, thanks to the government and their bullshit. However, it's going to be bulldozed to make way for the Hunter Metro Station.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, I know. It's great. Because apparently we need a metro station in Sydney. You know, our train lines are fine, but anyway. So it's pretty sad to see the place be going. You know, as someone who's played there a few times and knows a lot of people and a lot of bands who have also played there, it's going to be a big, big, big horrible loss to the already dying scene here in Sydney. Now, the government have said that they will help it relocate, whatever the fuck that means.
That was going to be my next question. It's like, if they're bulldozing it to make way for a metro station, that means the government must have bought it off them or something, or bought it off the owners if they don't own the place themselves.
Yeah, look, it very well could have been. I don't know. All I know is that
maybe that's the help they're getting. It's like, well, we've bought it off you, so you could take that money and go make it somewhere else.
Yeah, I know. The problem is, where are they going to go that's going to replace that? You know what I mean? Because it was such a unique setup, like literally pizza shop in the front, live music venue at the back, and then a hidden bar underneath that bar.
Yeah. So, where are they going to be able to do a space like that?
Yep.
Where are they going to be allowed to? What local councils are going to let them do it? Although your next piece of news here about a potential, maybe perhaps, entertainment precinct on Enmore Road, that might help things along.
I was going to say, maybe they'll be moving to Enmore. Proposal going through government at the moment to make Enmore Road, which includes the Enmore Theatre there, just right near Newtown. Call it Newtown. It's Enmore. It's not Newtown, but for all intents and purposes, it's fucking Newtown. There's a proposal going through government at the moment for that particular area to be the first special entertainment precinct in New South Wales. I mean, we're behind every other fucking state, and nothing's actually been signed off or actually done with this except a local council vote, from what I understand, that the council will support the proposal or something. So to the best of my knowledge, it's still obviously very early days, but it's a start at least. It's just a shame it's in Enmore, which is a pain in the ass to get to. So
I was going
to
say, because you've just mentioned that it's sort of kind of Newtown, but not really Newtown. And all I ever hear about Newtown is that it's just full of a bunch of NIMBY bastards who don't want to allow anything to happen. For those of you who live overseas and may not be familiar with the acronym that I just used there, NIMBY is not in my backyard.
Yes, yeah.
So they're the sorts of people who just like, oh no, we can't have the nightclub here, sort of thing.
It's not which too seems bad to just be, anymore because the to their credit, the Inner West Council have basically stamped a lot of that out now. They're one of the first councils in Australia to actually introduce the whole, if you buy next to a pub and then they do loud shows, tough shit legislation. Yeah.
You could fill out a triple S form and
exactly.
The triple S form in this context being stiff shit, sunshine.
So we will see what happens. I'm quietly optimistic, but I am not hopeful because I've seen this sort of shit just die in the water as per
usual. So when you
say
government, though, we're talking about local government, or are we talking about Koala Killer and Pork Barrel Arrow here?
Well, for it to be declared a special entertainment precinct, I believe it has to go to New South Wales state government. However, the local council has voted that they will actually support the creation of it at that particular place. Will Koala Killer and Pork Barrel Arrow actually do anything about that? Fucking no, they won't. They will just keep raping the state and fucking everything up for everyone.
Depends how marginal the electorate is, probably, I'm guessing.
Oh, it's not. It's a safe green seat. Like, it ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, then who cares? Then the government's going to say, well, what are you going to do for us? Nothing? Well, you can eat shit.
Exactly. So unfortunately, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I'm quietly hopeful. I am, however, pessimistic on it getting up. I said that the other way around before, but I'm hopeful that something will happen, but I don't think it will. And it is a bit of a pain in the ass to get to, too. It's just a shit. Like, why fucking Enmore? I mean, I understand why, because of all the arts and culture and shit that generally goes on in Enmore, but, like, seriously, there's a million other places in Sydney that would be better because they're accessible by train.
Yeah, but if it's already happening and if you've already got theatre and arts already happening in that place, it makes sense to just keep it in the one place rather than try to pick it up and move it somewhere else.
Mm, yeah, that's fair.
If you've already got the people there and you've already got the places there and the spaces for it to happen, then why change it? Why try and take it somewhere else where you're just going to run into more problems and maybe a local council that don't really care that much?
Or both.
You may as well keep it in somewhere where it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's totally fair.
I don't know. I was going to say, if you live in that particular part of the world and you want to see this sort of thing happen, write to your local MP. Tell them all about it.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. The only way you can affect change is to lobby and to have the politicians receive lobby from people saying, why can't you make this happen?
Yep.
You know, we need this in our city.
Yeah, and we absolutely do. There's no doubt that we need more of this kind of stuff in our cities and more of this kind of stuff, particularly in Sydney. We need more, protection of our nightlife, because God knows it's had a rough go over the last decade.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty much been going on for the last 10 years. There's always been conversations about shutting this down, restricting this and restricting that and changing this, and no, we can't have it there or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there is one final piece of news, and there is an album out now courtesy of World Within Worlds and dear friend of the show, Lachlan Dale. This is a collection of music and culture from pre-war Syria in collaboration with Spanish filmmaker and musician Mikel Gasco. Now, unfortunately, like when you talk to people about Syria, it's usually become like a byword for war, devastation, terrorism, etc. But there's a hell of a lot of beautiful music in that part of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to put a link in the show notes to the album. I urge you all, if you are even remotely interested in sort of Middle Eastern music or Middle Eastern culture, please buy the record. All proceeds are going to charity to help out people in this area. I mean, there are, you know, the Syrian diaspora is now stretched all over the world. There are people in Canada, Germany, America, Australia. They're everywhere now because of what's happening in the home country. They all had to leave.
Absolutely. It's definitely worth a listen, I reckon. At least expand your mind. And you know what? If you hate it, well, your money's gone to a good cause. So worst case scenario. Indeed.
So before we jump into our main topics of music, there is one final news topic that we kind of have to talk about, I think.
Oh, I think I know where this is going.
Oh, yes. This is the topic of Megadeth, David Ellefson, and all of that. I'm going to give the very, very short Reader's Digest version of this. There was some messages that were brought out by a third party between him and a surprisingly young girl, not underage, but, you know, he's nearly 60 and she's like 19, so, you know, gross. And lots of people in lots of comment threads all over the internet were like, this is disgusting, this is gross, Dave Mustaine, how can you be in a band with this person? And Dave Mustaine has responded by kicking him out of the band. Thoughts, opinions?
All right. Assuming that nothing he did was illegal, and I don't know all the details, so, you know.
As far as we know from what has come out, yes, nothing he has done is illegal.
It's just a bit.
Having said, it's just gross. You can have a look at the text messages and you can watch the videos. Yes, there are videos. We're not going to discuss that on this show because this is a family show. As much as we swear and carry on, there are many things. There are some things that just don't need to be discussed here.
We have limits, people. We have limits.
We do.
Look, my problem with it is this. I understand why Dave probably kicked him out of the band, and it's called image protection and brand protection. My concern is with the backlash from the community. In that, it's really none of their business. Providing she was of age, she wasn't underage, there wasn't any, you know, weird, creepy pedophilia or anything like that going on.
I don't know, a 60-year-old man with a 19-year-old girl, that's, you know, just because they're arbitrarily defined. Yeah, but it's like, but it's not illegal. It's like, yeah, but it's still gross and bordering.
I'm not suggesting that it's not.
If you find yourself passing the age of consent in when you should and shouldn't be talking, like, you know, talking about those sorts of things with people like that, it's like, I don't know, you it's just gross.
Look, I understand.
But you are 100% right. Dave Mustaine has kicked him out of the band because, I'm assuming that Dave Mustaine is probably the majority right shareholder in Megadeth Incorporated or whatever it's called, and that the rest of the band members are, if not salaried employees of the band, then probably something pretty close to it.
Maybe.
And B, they're about to put a new record out. I'm pretty sure Dave Mustaine doesn't want to discuss the inner workings of what his bandmates been up to with young girls for the rest of the record cycle.
Yeah, no, understandable. It's definitely a damage control thing, I think, by by Mustaine. And look, smart business move. Can't take it off the guy. It was what Ellefson did maybe morally dubious? Yeah, probably. Was it illegal? No. Did it garner the attention of a lot of people on the internet? Yes. Should it have? Probably not. I don't know. I look at it like this and I say, let's say that the girl was, and I want to make it absolutely clear here because fuck knows I don't want to get sued for anything. I want to make it absolutely clear. I'm in no way saying that this was the case. I'm making this a complete hypothetical. Let's say hypothetically that that girl was a prostitute and he was paying for that. Why are people kind of okay with that? And people go, oh, the sad old man has to pay for sex. But the fact that she wasn't taking money for it, all of a sudden he's a dirty old man. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it screams of double standards to me.
I was going to say one's transactional, one isn't.
Yeah, but there's still somewhat of a sort of a transaction going, I suppose. And one of them you could argue is just a job and all that kind of stuff. Sure. I have plenty of friends who are sex workers and in the sex working industry and so on and so forth. And one of them actually made that point to me. And she said to me, you know what? I don't understand what the issue is. If it was a hooker, no one would care. But the fact that it's a girl, it's like they've corrupted the girl or he's corrupted the young girl or something like that. It's just fucked up. So, you know, there's a few things. And yes, there's obviously the argument about, you know, him being in a powerful situation because if she's a fan and, you know, all that kind of stuff, yeah, is there a duty of care and all that kind of stuff, which I understand.
Was going to be my next point as well. And it's like, you know, there's a definite power imbalance here, you know, big, famous, important rock musician versus young fan.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that in itself is not the greatest thing. I mean, one of my favorite people in the world is Keanu Reeves, mostly because I like the way that he treats women. Because you know, he's really, 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 really respectful toward them.
That in itself is a low bar. It's like I like the guy because he doesn't treat women like pieces of meat.
But the fact that that's abnormal, right? I mean,
yeah, I know. you don't have to sell me too hard on the men are pigs theory, but like that's a whole conversation for another day.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We're not going to lose the whole episode to this, but it'll be interesting to see what comes of it. Frankly,
well, it's also in the statement as well that they quote there was something about a strained relationship already between Dave Mustaine and David Ellefson. And I was just wondering, I wonder if this is like Dave Mustaine needed an excuse to fire Dave Ellefson and Dave Ellefson served him up one on a plate. It's like, aha, here we go. Improper dealings with a young fan. Right, that's it. Get out of my band.
Yeah, maybe.
As for Dave Ellefson, I don't know. Maybe he'll start up a rival band and then complain for the next 40 years about how unfairly he was treated in the first band.
Maybe. You never know.
Anyway, I think that's a good spot to leave that mini topic. If you have an opinion on that one, feel free to send us a tweet or use our contact form on our website to have it have a conversation with us about that one. Always interested to hear other viewpoints other than like, you know, two white dudes who run a podcast from Australia.
Absolutely.
So we're going to move on to our main topic today. Our main topic for today is we're actually going to discuss three different records. One of which is Frost's brand new record, Day and Age. The second one is Kayak's Out of This World, the record that we discussed the lead-off single of last week. And then we're going to discuss an exclusive preview that we've been given by dear friends of the show over at Collision Course, Observists from the Ashes. But we'll start with Frost and Day and Age. What did you think of this one, Dave?
I really quite like this album, actually. I've got to give it to them for one of the funniest openings to an album I've heard in ages. Just that sweet little kid speaking, and it's like, enjoy yourselves, you scum. I laughed so fucking hard when I first heard it and looked like an absolute madman in the office at work. But the track itself, I mean, I absolutely love it. And I don't know if it's something that we've ever really talked about on the show. I'm almost certain we've mentioned it in passing. But having that amazing track one, side one song is so important. And it's great when bands get it so right, exactly like these guys have here.
Absolutely. And when we're talking about, when we were talking earlier about Taramaze, we were talking about a 26-minute song with lots of bloat and no real movement. Mm. This song got to kick the record off with a 13.5-minute song, but at no point does it ever feel like that it's sort of stuck in one place. There's always some sort of movement in a direction, and there's a sort of a theme going on.
Yeah, there's definitely motifs throughout the song and throughout the album, actually. But they're not just kind of trying to hammer that same thing down your throat. You know, there's takes on it, and there's like little bits here and there, and it blends very, very, very well. I mean, these guys obviously know what they're doing and have been doing it for quite some time, so it's sort of to be expected.
Totally. The one thing I was going to mention about this record is that if you buy the deluxe edition, you get the instrumental tracks on the second disc. Mm. Now, ordinarily, I wouldn't bother with instrumental tracks because of records with lyrics on them, because it's just kind of whatever. But in this one, it's great for showcasing all the layers of synths and guitars underneath the lyrics.
Oh, yeah, fuck yeah.
There's a lot there's a lot of depth. There's all the, you know, I don't know how many layers of synthesizers and guitars. I've got no idea. There's a lot there. So you take the lyrics away and there's something there to listen to. It's like, oh, that's a cool part. Or, hey, I like the blending of these two things, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm, absolutely. And can we also talk about the track "The Boy Who Stood Still"?
I mean, what a great song! What a great song! Good.
You know, it's just like a musical story with a wonderful backing track. It's fucking great. Like maybe I'm just getting old. I don't know. Maybe I just like people speaking at me. But I'm finding that there's a few more of these things coming out where I'm liking this kind of stuff. You know, more the spoken word and stories being told and all that kind of stuff, rather than just, you know, balls to the wall metal shred for 10 minutes.
Totally. I mean, it's been a lot of people have done it for a long time, like, you know, spoken word stuff. You know, Marillion with Fish did it. They did it quite a bit on their records, and Fish has done it since on his solo records. Stephen Wilson has done it. Porcupine Tree have done it. There's lots, and even Devin Townsend is incorporating of like spoken word stuff on his most recent record, Empath. It was like a couple of spoken word sections in there to kick off certain songs. And
yeah,
it's really cool. It's quite an interesting dynamic.
Absolutely. You know, these guys are great. What else can we really say? I mean, just go out and listen to it. Go out and buy it. Like, it's a great album.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a record, great melodies. Something that we discussed at length when we spoke about the Others EP that they released last year.
Yep.
Not sure whether that was like extra songs from this record or extra songs from the previous record. Not quite sure.
Mm.
But it does have a familiar quality. However, it leaves an impression. There's something here that's original sounding that draws me back in after repeated listens, which is also true of the Others EP as well. I've listened to that record so many times since we recovered it on the show.
I think that's just true of Frost. Like, Frost seemed to have this natural ability to make every listen sound fresh somehow, and I don't know how. Like, you know how many bands you listen to a song a couple of times and then you're like, oh, I love that bit where blah, blah, blah. I love the bit where blah, blah, blah. You know, you still get that in these songs, but you're not waiting for those amazing bits. The whole song is just, you know, conducively fantastic. So
totally. You know. And also as well, it's different in the prog sphere because this band doesn't necessarily feature the guitar too much. A lot of music that we listen to and a lot of music that we talk about on this show is mostly guitar driven and guitar based.
Yes.
This is very much sort of synthesizer and electronic based, which I think is where music is going. I don't know about you, Dave, but I think that like the guitar as a concept in the sort of standard tuning or, you know, whatever, I don't know. I think we've kind of, have we reached the end of that? Is there much more that could be done that hasn't already been done?
Look,
the standard tuning. I mean, obviously then you can move on to like alternate tunings and new standard tuning if you want to follow the line down with Robert Fripp.
But I mean,
what do you think? Are we kind of done with the concept?
Look, the answer is yes and the answer is no, right? I mean, you're always going to find some new guy who's figured out something to do with the guitar and suddenly it's completely different. There's some new playing technique or something. You know, but are we recycling ideas? Yeah, absolutely. Are we, you know, maybe
we've been recycling
ideas?
But the thing is with guitar music there, we've been recycling ideas ever since Robert Johnson and Muddy Waters. So,
well, yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know. The answer is I don't know. Are we at the end of guitar virtuosity? That's, I think, the real question here. And I think the answer is probably we're coming to a close on it, which is a real shame. But
That's a good point, actually, about guitar virtuosity, because I think there's always going to be a space for what is laughingly referred to as, like, you know, three chords and the truth, which is like country music.
Yeah.
I think there's always going to be a space for that. Whether or not that actually happens on a guitar, though, I don't know.
Yeah,
but absolutely. That sort of music where it's just sort of simple and, you know, they're telling a story, I think there's always a space for that because there's always new stories that can be told.
Absolutely.
Or new ways to tell old stories, more to the point.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I hope it's not the end for the guitar, but I think definitely things are going far more electronic. Things are going far more, you know, home studios, right? I mean, it's cheap to build a home studio. It's cheap to record an album, and it's really easy to program a drum machine. So why wouldn't you do it?
I was going
to
say, I imagine the synthesizer thing as well is even easier because it's all in the computer. You don't need large speak. You don't need, you know, if you're chasing an original or a, you know, like an old school guitar sound, that sort of still happens with wires, cables, and amplifiers.
Yeah.
Whereas with the synthesizer, it's all in the computer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're manipulating things within a computer, and it's all being recorded there. It's all being sort of stored there, so you can do it basically anywhere
and modified. Like, this is the other thing as well. You don't have to retake an entire solo because you fucked up a note. You go into the MIDI editor and you move it, and you're done. So, you know, is it the way forward? Probably. Is it the way I think that's better forward? No, I don't think so. But we should move on to the next track, next album, which was Kayaks Out of This World, which is in stark contrast to what we were just talking about. We were talking about, you know, Frost's Day and Age, how it's very synth driven and so on and so forth. This is, we're dealing with a great prog album that has pianos and electric guitar solos and all that stuff. What did you think of it, Hoggy?
Totally. I mean, this album is very different in that it sort of feels a bit, I don't know, I got this sort of a vibe that's a bit like a musical.
Yeah.
There's some, the whiff of the sort of Hunchback of Notre Dame in there for some reason. I'm not sure why, but there just is. The second song on the record as well also had a real modern take on something from like the 80s. Mm-hmm. I don't know what band. I don't know. I had Duran Duran in my head for some reason, but I don't think that's right. There's something in there that's like that.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of bands that are doing this now, sort of take a modern take on sort of sounds from the 80s. I mean, Ulva did it excellently last year. Mm. And, you know, arguably Stephen Wilson has done his version of that as well.
Yeah.
Slightly less great, in my opinion, but many people disagree with me.
Same with me. I mean, look, it's a great progressive rock number that opens the album, right? But I think the band you're talking about is Toto. Because there's Toto in there, there's Elton John, and there's some other like amazing guitar work and there's beautiful clean prog vocals. You know, the title track Out of This World, Critical Mass and Kerry, three standout tracks for me. They were similar enough to be from the same album, but dissimilar enough to be a great three tracks as well. But there is an issue, an underlying issue with this album. And I think this is where the limits of guitar stuff come in, right? And this sort of links back to what we were talking about last time. And that is, if I see one more motherfucker on the internet that's just bought a Petrucci signature guitar, a Petrucci signature amplifier, and they're going, oh, listen to my guitar tone, oh, it sounds exactly like John Petrucci, I swear to God, I'm going to fly to them, I'm going to fucking drop kick them in the head, right? They all kind of sound the same. And the same sort of follows here, right? This album is quite formulaic, but the guitarist doesn't really change up his sound all that much. It's always the same thing. I'm guessing it's a Strat or a Super Strat, slam through the front of a Marshall with everything on 11, and he just goes for it, right? Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's an unholy, amazing, beautiful tone. And if you've ever been in the room, like an old JDM 45 or something like that, with a Strat plugged through the front and just dimed, A, you probably don't have any hearing left, and B, it's just a glorious, amazing, beautiful sound, really. They're just incredible. But the second you hear them, that's all they're good for. That's what they do. That's the sound, right? And it's the same thing in this album. It's very formulaic. It's very much the same. You know, there's a guitar solo in there somewhere. Each song's sort of 5 or 6 minutes long. You know, and then you go to the next track, and it's like, oh, cool, it's the same thing. And then you go to the next one, oh, cool, it's the same thing. because of those limitations with those instruments, people tend to box themselves in, unlike Frost, where they just go, well, no, I can have this synth droning a note throughout the entire song, and yeah, I can do that live because it's a synth and it will do that. So I don't know.
It's, yeah, either you're playing it live or you put it on a loop, whichever you prefer.
Exactly. It's a long album too.
It is. That's what I was saying. I looked at it and I was like, wait, a 75-minute record in 2021 in this economy?
Yeah.
With other bands doing shorter records and maybe doing less songs but having sort of more in them. I don't know. But you are 100% correct about the guitar tone. I mean, there is that. Yeah, I heard it and it was like, yeah, that's obviously some sort of Stratocaster sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's very sort of, if I was being lazy about it, I would describe it as Gilmore-esque, but I'm not going to because that's just lazy.
Yeah.
But there is that sort of Stratocaster sound to it.
Yeah, it's that 80s cock rocky, power rocky kind of vibe. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It just gets a bit samey. But I agree with you. 75 minutes for this record, a little bit long. They probably could have dropped a couple of tracks, to be honest with you. I don't know which ones, but there were a couple there. I was like, cool. It kind of sounds the same. Yeah, but not a bad album by any means. It's a great album. It's just a bit repetitive for my liking.
Yeah, but, yeah. That's a pretty fair criticism, I think. It's just, yeah, there's a sort of a sameness to some of the songs and, yeah, there's a certain sort of formula they're approaching for many of them, which is fine, but 15 songs with more or less the same sort of structure to it wears a bit thin, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand exactly what you mean. All right, we should move on to the last one, which is actually a bit of an exclusive preview we got from our friends over at Collision Course. This is Observist's new EP that's coming out in about a week's time, actually. It's called From the Ashes. Hoggy, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I did have a listen to this. Now, obviously, we're sort of doing this podcast ostensibly talking about progressive music as such. Mm-hmm. We don't normally mention a lot of like metalcore stuff on this show, although we have had your mate Dan Polaris on the show.
Yes.
You know, and he had some opinions about, you know, it's like, yeah, we're a metalcore band. We don't, you know, like, we wouldn't call ourselves a prog band, and we certainly wouldn't be headlining a prog festival because we'd probably get laughed out of the room.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, you know, I like watching metalcore bands live. I don't necessarily spend a huge amount of time sitting around listening to the records. But I will say this, though. I mean, this EP is a shining example of why Australian modern metal acts are on top of their game.
Oh, fuck
like, they
yeah.
always have been, and they always will be.
Yeah,
we do metalcore in this country very, very well.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the biggest
in
the world.
Many people mightn't
Polaris,
like that. They think
Parkway
about
Drive.
It. Yeah, totally. You know, we do so many great bands. There are so many great bands in this style of genre. And people might get really snobby and they think, ooh, you know, they think back to bands like AC/DC and stuff like that and they think that they're better. But I disagree. This is like the new guard. Yeah, sure, those kids probably grew up listening to all that stuff. But now they've taken that, mixed in some modern stuff so it doesn't sound directly like that. And now we've got the metalcore.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. I mean the reality of this album is it formulaic? Yes. Is it a little samey for two prog snobs? Also, yes. But there's only so much you can really do with an 8-string guitar doing that bow kind of thing, right? And the reality is both Hoggy and I understand that, right?
I know. Looking for like novelty and sort of interesting stylistic things in a metalcore band is a bit like, to borrow a phrase from Tim Minchin, looking for a rhyme scheme in a cookbook. It's
absolutely
not going to work and you're going to stuff the souffle up.
Absolutely. It's not necessarily a bad thing. We're not saying that these guys are bad. We're not saying that it's a bad album. It's just probably not for two guys who grew up listening to Marillion, Dream Theater and Pink Floyd. You know what I mean? But we recognize that as Hoggy says, you know, it was absolutely a phenomenal example of why Australians do metalcore better than any other country. And I don't care. I will fight you on this. I will fight anyone on this.
This
on
is the hill.
Beaches.
This is the hill you want to die on, is it?
This is the hill I'm a die on. Yeah, absolutely. If there's one shining example of the Australian music industry, it's that shit. It's not fucking Keith Urban prancing around with his bullshit bloody drum machines and crap singing terrible, terrible, terrible bloody bro country, right? It's these guys who put the fucking work in. They go and they tour for 9 months of the fucking year, right? And they're doing all the crazy shit that you should be doing as a band, and they're doing extremely well. You know, there's other bands in this scene as well, like Alpha Wolf. We've already mentioned Polaris, you know, Justice for the Damned, etc. If you like that sort of shit, you're going to love this EP because it's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I don't understand why, when we have the most successful hardcore and metalcore music here in Australia globally, and yeah, I'll back that up, why it's still so shadowed and it's never on anything major. Like, there's never any major festivals or anything that are featuring the guys like Polaris or Parkway Drive or anything like that.
Oh, hang on a minute now. Parkway Drive was certainly like the darling favourites of Triple J for a good number of years there.
A little bit. I mean, yes, they had some stuff that was around, but you don't see it nowadays.
No, right? Well, no,
one heavy album that's on every week, whenever the fuck that is.
Right. Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. It's like there were very much a passing fad, you know. They were like it was like the glory thing for Triple J for a while there, and they really hammered it home.
Yeah,
you know, they loved Silverchair for a while, and then they sort of moved on, and then they loved End of Fashion for a while, and then they moved on.
Yeah.
You know, and then Mike Mills writes a Toe Hider song and they play that too, and it's just like, you know, whatever the sound of the day is. Now it seems to be mostly, you know, dudes in the Western Sydney with Lebanese heritage doing hip hop.
Yeah.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all, but it's just like, well, that's kind of what they're chasing now. There seems to be a lot of hip hop and rap and that sort of thing happening. Yeah, on Triple J these days, as opposed to rock and things.
Yeah, and I don't really understand it, especially not when we have such a hold on this particular type of music here in Australia globally. So yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really make sense. But when
it's got a hold here in Australia and overseas, but this is always what happens. Like, any good, they have to leave.
Yeah, absolutely.
If Polaris end up spending 6 months of the year, you know, in a post-COVID world, hope to God that comes one day, they end up spending 6 months of the year touring America because that's where the dollars are. It's like, awesome, you know, join the queue with everybody else over in America. There are plenty of musicians who just live in America and tour America all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's where you've got to do it, unfortunately. Which is for numerous reasons that we're not going to lose the rest of the show to.
If people want to know what those reasons are, go back and listen to our interview with Dan Finari. It's all there. He'll tell you all about it.
Absolutely. And
by the way, Dave, you should try and get him back on the show again post-COVID situation and what's happening and how you all doing and all the rest of it.
They're about to go on tour again, so I might be able to.
What, in America?
No, here. They're doing a regional tour here. And in actual fact, I mean, I was actually going to mention this on the show tonight, that they're doing a massive regional tour. Polaris are doing a massive regional tour. But when I last checked, they'd actually sold out the entirety of that run, with the exception of, I think, Cairns and Airlie Beach are the only two places. Yeah, Cairns and Airlie Beach. And they're playing in like Penrith and places like that. So, you know, a lot of it's sold out. So I was going to mention it, but there's not really any point. But congratulations to the guys for selling out a tour. That's fucking awesome.
I was going to say, and that probably gives you an indication of like how much people like metalcore in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing, you know, sort of mid-sized country towns. They're not playing any of the big cities, as far as I can work out. Mm. And we all know from personal experience, Dave, how much people like to travel from the major cities to the regional centres for the gigs and vice versa.
Mm. Oh,
so I
absolutely.
Imagine these are all people living in those areas who are coming out to see the show.
Absolutely. And I want to just put something into context here. Dream Theatre, the last time they came to Australia, did not sell out. Okay? I love the guys. I would go and see them every night of the week if I could. But they did not sell out, right? Now, yes, they're playing bigger things, but they're also an astronomically larger band, right?
With many, 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 and many, many more resources behind them.
Absolutely.
Like the big inside-out promotion machine behind them.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, as far as I can work out, don't have that kind of major label support. Sure, they've probably got some label support somewhere.
They've definitely got label support.
Yeah, but not that level of label support, though.
I wouldn't think so. But to give you an idea on Facebook, and I know you can't go always off Facebook likes and all that kind of stuff and followers, but Dream Theater have 3.7 million followers on Facebook. Polaris have 93,000.
That's genuinely impressive.
So it's not even like close, right? But they've managed to absolutely slam that and they've done very, very well. So anyway, digressing, but back on the Observist for a second. This particular album is coming out this coming Friday at time of release of this episode. It's coming out on the, what is it, the 4th of June. So if you are a fan of any of that kind of stuff, if you happen to be a Polaris fan and you're listening to this, if you happen to be one of the boys from Polaris and you're listening to this, if you happen to be a fan of anything to do with the metalcore scene and the hard, heavy stuff that comes out of Australia, do yourself a favor, go and buy this album because you will fucking love it. I'll guarantee you that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that about wraps it up for our main topic, so we should jump into our personal album reviews. Now, the album that I gave you, Dave, was from a UK-based musical collective called the Ezra Collective.
Yes.
With a record that was out last year called You Can't Steal My Joy. What'd you think?
Yes, hip-hop meets jazz. Basically, what happens when black musicians meet amazingly good black musicians? Look, honestly, a great album to have on whilst doing anything, and that includes whilst doing nothing. Really interesting jazz shit in there too. Like some really interesting stuff. And the way that they've managed to meld a lot of the, you know, hip hop and there's some reggae in there as well. And they've managed to put that over what's ostensibly, you know, probably like Southern jazz styles is really, really, really cool. Definitely worth a listen. If you're a fan of anything to do with any of those styles, it's really, really, really cool.
Fantastic. Glad you liked it.
It was good. It was a bit different to what I was expecting, but it was good. Now, Hoggy, I gave you an album that I still can't pronounce by Trope, Eleutheromania, I think is how you say it. What did you think?
There's a lot of variety on this record, mixing of styles and feels. I mean, the first song had a bit of a kind of a Tool feel to it with some of the bass tones and the drum patterns, and the second song was more in the sort of alternative rock direction that they seem to mostly cover. Mm-hmm. And then the third song opens with like a big powerful groove, which kind of had a bit of an Aussie prog kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth song was a cover of Shout by Tears for Fears out of nowhere.
Yep.
I could go on, but I think I've made my point.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of variety, a lot of mixing of stuff, and the presence of a tough, gritty sort of female vocal there. It's not operatic. It's not sort of copying Heather Findlay or the lady from Evanescence, which seems to be what everybody else wants to rip off these days. It's very interesting. Very good record. It's not like super prog in a way, but there's definitely some progressive elements to it that people might enjoy. So check it out.
Awesome. All right. What do you got for me this week?
So I have a record by a band called Voronoi, I think is how you say this, Voronoi. Mm-hmm. The record is called The Last 3 Seconds. This came out only last week or so, so check it out. Cool. Tell me what you think.
Awesome. Will do.
What have you got for me?
For you, I'm going to have a change of pace this week, actually. An album that cropped up in my latest prog releases blog that I read. Album is called The Most Dangerous Woman in America. The artist is Laura Mead. Take a listen. Tell me what you think.
Alrighty, will do.
Awesome.
So that about wraps it up here for this episode of the 9-8 Podcast. If you want to find the show notes for this episode, you can find them at the 98podcast.fireside.fm/72. You can find us on Twitter at 98FM. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/98FM. Please get in contact with us. Send us your feedback. Tell us what you think of what we've had to say today, any new records, any people in your area or your part of the world that are releasing new music that you think we should hear, by all means, drop us a line, tell us what you think.
And if you happen to be from a music, a label or anything like that, and you've got some stuff that you want to give us a bit of a scoop on, by all means, flick it over to us. We have had some people do that recently. We've also had to tell some people that, look, it's not really our thing. This is not what we really talk about. But look, if you think that we may enjoy it, flick it over. We'll take a listen, and we'll at least let you know what we think. If not, we'll give it a spin on air. As always, thank you so much for basically listening to people yell into the ether. My name is David Ellis.
My name is Alex Ogg. Thank you very much. We'll see you all next time.
See you then.